It is the 50th, this summer is the 50th anniversary of that book. And somehow in this time, more people have been helped in the disease of alcoholism by these simple tools than by all other therapies combined in the history of mankind over 5,000 years. Which indicates this is a rather precious gift. And yet the biggest battle you and I will ever have is to keep from spoiling it and wrecking it. And I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about us. Because we are defective people, we are emotionally insecure people. As we get better, we get sometimes unable to live in good times. It's a funny phenomenon here. Our whole life has been spent learning how to deal with bad times, that good times become terra incognita. An awful lot of people have gotten drunk because things were good. So we have to learn to live with certain facilities. The 12 steps, which we've talked about a lot and we'll talk about again sometime, are most important to our recovery. But they, in a sense, the 12 steps really, you can trace much of that back to the Oxford groups. Much of our literature is, at one level or another, based on what Bill Wilson learned in the Oxford groups. Incidentally, I'm sure some of you know this, but it's an interesting fact, why what became known as the Oxford group was founded. In 1912, a young minister felt that Christianity had become too jaded and people were too blasé. And he founded an organization and he called it the First Century Christian Association. Its purpose was to get people enthusiastic the way they had been during the first century in the catacombs. That later became the Oxford group. And in the late 1930s, as most of us know, when Dr. Buckman, it seemed to others, was more impressed by the efficiency of Hitler and Mussolini than by the democracies, Oxford University had to ask him to stop using their name. And he changed it to Moral Rearmament, which still operates. But much of the literature came from there. And it has been effective. There's some things Bill Wilson added in the steps that made them completely efficient for you and I. They do something that nothing else in history's ever done. They provide an incremental spiritual awakening that nothing else has ever done. There's been all sorts of agencies that want to give us spiritual wounds, but because of the nature of our illness, we've been given make amends to that bitch. Because that's the way we can do it, little by little. The interesting thing, in a real sense, the thing that makes AA such the most impressive, original, strictly original thought Bill Wilson ever had, were the 12 traditions. They're not based on anything. There is no spiritual predecessor for the 12 traditions. There is no literature which that can be traced back to. Now, the 12 traditions to many people seem like just something they give to people to read to kill time while the speakers are studying their compact mirrors. I think the traditions are what makes AA viable today. They're so easily forgotten. Don't panic. I'm not going to go through the 12 traditions. But I'm going to take up a couple of them, which I think you may find to be of interest, because they are the ones who today are under the most attack throughout the world. Meredith read them, the long form, very well. Most of you know, that's the way the traditions were written. And then they were later synthesized down to the little short ones we find in our literature. Now, these traditions were based on a lot of things. They weren't based on what should be. They were based on watching people die from doing it differently. And they were based on the experience of some of the Washingtonians 100 years before that that had dissolved. They were not based on good. They were based on reactions to lethal misunderstandings. And that's, they're not designed to make you good. They're designed to save your butt. If you remember that, they're getting much easier to follow. These traditions are, you would think, would be gratefully accepted by alcoholics, but they weren't. Bill Wilson wrote these in the late 1940s. And you want to know something? A great many, maybe a majority of people in AA said, "We don't want them. We didn't come here to get rules. We came here to get freedom. AA is the way it's okay the way it is. Take your traditions and send them to England, where they'll be quickly forgotten." Oh, I'm sorry, I thought I was in Ireland. A good example of the, you know, we keep thinking about those first people as they were great Christian martyrs who were dedicated and loving. They were just as goofy as you and I are. More so, because they didn't have a wealth of experience to go on. You know, they talk about the, we talked about the other night again, Bill Wilson talking about the first, and when he wrote the book, the over 100 men and women have stayed sober a year. He later admitted there weren't 100 men sober a year and women. There were 79. But he thought 100 would sound more impressive. We understand that. And most of them died drunk. That's kind of hard to think about, isn't it? Most of them died drunk. People died drunk then worse than they do now. The survivors were stalwarts, but the people who went down, because they didn't have any concept of a structure. Everybody was their own chief. Everybody did their own way. Nobody knew how to do it. Dr. Bob, who sat in Akron, Dr. Bob and Bill were antithetical personalities. You know, they always talk about, it's a terrible thing to say, but it kind of sounds true, that if Dr. Bob had been the only founder of AA, you would still have to go to Akron to hear about it. If Bill Wilson had been the only founder of AA, he'd have sold it in 1939. But between the two of them, they provided an exquisite balance. But if you went to Dr. Bob and to Bill Wilson, you got two different viewpoints of AA. But it's the same thing. So, in the late 1940s, they decided to have an international convention. These early, dynamic, wonderful people, really true story, they were. But they were alcoholics like you and me, and they were petty and nasty. And the people at Akron said, "We'll have it in Akron, or we won't have it." And the people in New York said, "Feel my muscle. We'll have it in New York, or there ain't going to be any goddamn convention. You hear me, boy?" Just typical love in action, as we know. There's only ever been one thing wrong with AA. It's full of alcoholics. If it weren't for that, we could be something, you know. And they almost called off the first international convention. Can you imagine that? They acted like you and me. Well, not that bad, but I mean, they acted. But Bill and Dr. Bob, they never had any crosswords. They could always talk. They effected a compromise. They called it Cleveland. Okay, but just so we don't have to go to Akron. You know. People like us don't have happy childhoods, but they're long ones. So they went to Akron, to Cleveland. And I have some tapes home from that convention. You can get them, they're available. Of people introducing the traditions one by one and trying to make people understand them so they'll accept them. Because people say, I don't want traditions. But one by one, guys got up and took a tradition and tried to explain what it was about and why it really wasn't so bad. And as a result of that, later on in that convention, they begrudgingly voted in the 12 traditions. And these were much more realistic than the 12 steps. Of course, there didn't have to be any vote on the 12 steps, but there was a vote on the traditions. And so these traditions have stayed in ever since. And the irony about them is there's no way to enforce them anyway. That's really kind of funny to have a law you can't enforce. I've always thought AA should have enforcement techniques, especially if you're a sponsor. In my area, I'm known as a dictator-type sponsor. You can't be a dictator. I am a dictator, but you technically can't be one. Because all the dictatee ever has to say is, screw you, and the dictatorship is over. I've always thought it would be nice if we had people that could come in the night and say,
did you say screw you to your sponsor? Do you still have relatives in Akron, Ohio?
That would make it only fair, because you're giving your life helping others. But you have no enforcement. AA has no enforcement. Every year, boobs blow these traditions one after another. People say, well, it's wonderful, it's good for AA. Last week in the papers, two wonderful members of our fellowship have taken it upon themselves to bring Alcoholics Anonymous to Russia in front of the cameras. It's never gotten anywhere else that way, but there's been a series of people who go to Russia, and they can't wait to jump in front of the camera and say, I'm an AA, and I'm bringing Russia AA, and love and humility now that I think about it. And they all are crazy. There's a recent book out, some of you read it, The History of AA. A very good book, except for one thing. The woman who wrote it got access to the AA archives on the basis she would maintain the traditions. She's a member of AA. But she couldn't pass up the opportunity. She put her name and that she's an AA member on the cover, and that undid all the good that book did. He said, why not have movie stars? There's a lot of reasons. But the things that are under pressure around the world today, there's two or three things I'll talk briefly about, and then we'll go on to our coffee and to the marathon. And the question is, who can belong to AA? Who can belong to AA? People say, anyone who's got a severe problem. Alcohol, narcotics, that's a big thing today. Gambling, overeating. We're all in the same recovery. And that is absolutely false. We may be in the same recovery, but we are not recovering from the same thing. The third tradition states quite clearly the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, not to stop evil actions, not to stop anything. The basic tenet of Alcoholics Anonymous, here's the one thing I want to leave you with, is the same today in Bristol as it was in 1935 in that house in Akron. And ever since, do you know what AA stripped aside of all of its conventions, all of its meetings, all of its foo-farah? What Alcoholics Anonymous is, it's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to help him bring down his feelings of being different enough so that he will begin to take actions he does not yet believe in. That's what AA is. That is all it is. Everything else is secondary to that. That's what makes it different than all other therapies in the treatment of alcoholism. And no matter how you slice it, Alcoholics do not identify with cocaine addicts. That's why they founded Cocaine Anonymous, so that cocaine addicts would have cocaine addicts to identify with. I think it's safe to say alcoholics will not, as a rule, identify with basic hard narcotics addicts. That's why they founded Narcotics Anonymous. I knew the founders of Narcotics Anonymous. I've known the founders of all of these organizations because they all were founded in Los Angeles since I've been sober. And they've had some success, but not much, because narcotics addicts seem to have difficulty in allowing themselves to throw themselves all out into something. That kind of goes against the narcotic addict, laid-back, cool. And it's really, they've had trouble all over the world. Overeaters Anonymous. They founded Overeaters Anonymous so that one overeater could talk to another overeater. I was among the first speakers at Overeaters Anonymous, and I wasn't an overeater. But they had no successes yet, so they had to have AA members come over for a while and talk on obsessions and emotions until they had somebody who was staying abstinent, and then little by little they phased out the AA speakers. Because the best speaker in the world means nothing if you don't identify with the problem. Because it's easy, the back of your head, the cynical side says, it's easy for you, but my case is different. I have to find someone who can begin to convince me I'm not as different as I thought. That's why you can be an alcoholic and a narcotic addict. You can be an alcoholic and a cocaine addict. You can be an alcoholic and an overeater. You can be an alcoholic and a compulsive gambler. But to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you must be an alcoholic. That's all. That's what the traditions are about. And the purpose of AA is what? We forget to read the fifth tradition. The purpose of AA is not to raise money, not to get new books necessarily, not to be the best group in town, not to be the biggest group in the world, not to be anything. The only purpose that you and I have at the group level is to carry our message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And if what we're doing doesn't relate to that, it's always questionable. Yeah, it's okay to have an AA dance, but it's a contradiction in terms. You can have a dance made up of AA members, but there's hardly an AA dance. That does not carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That doesn't mean drinking alcoholic. That means alcoholic who still suffer. Some of the most suffering alcoholics are people who are sober. That's when the suffering truly comes. Another problem we have around the world today is the seventh tradition. There's been some... Still is a lot of controversy about that. You know, AA in one breath says they have a large prudent reserve, and then they send out literature saying they're not self-supporting. What the hell does that mean? How can you have these millions of dollars and not be self-supporting? And it turns out that's exactly the situation. Much of AA's income, it turns out, is from our publishing. Sales of literature. And you know who the largest purchaser of literature in the world is? Hazelden. They purchase more literature than anybody else in the world. Comcare now has come very close to them. So, we've been in a situation where, in a real sense, our operating money depends upon Hazelden and Comcare to a certain extent. And this has wisely made some of our servants nervous and edgy. Because although they've never done it, when you need that money from Hazelden to run, and they say, hey, on this one piece of literature, we're having just a little trouble with that paragraph. Couldn't you ease it off? Here's another draft you could use. It won't make much difference, but just ease off this hard line, AA. Be more tolerant towards us. After all, we are giving you millions of dollars. We might reject that, but sooner or later, somewhere along the line, if we need that money badly enough, It gets easy to cross that line. It gets easy to do this. It gets easy to do that. And I think that they made a very wise decision. They've altered the price of the literature so that our income is not really coming in all from literature. Hazelden now pays the same price that the Pacific Group pays in the whole. And we've asked contributions to be raised from the groups throughout the world. Bristol, 12 people, newcomers group, sends their money to the World Service Fund. The group I belong to in Los Angeles is the largest contributor in the world to that fund. And it's all the people in between. But we must be self-supporting. We must be self-supporting through our own contributions. It's a great spiritual thing, that hat. It enables people to know this is wonderful and it's almost free, but it's not for nothing. We have to pay our way. We are not allied with hospitals. We are not allied with alcoholic treatment facilities. It makes me crazy when people talk about this is an AA treatment facility. AA doesn't have treatment facilities. AA has 12 steps and 12 traditions. That's what they have. And some chairs and tables and an office in New York. That's all AA has. Everything else is extraneous. That's why this is a fellowship of the Spirit, and it certainly must be the only fellowship in the world that refuses to accept donations from people. You can only give, if you're a member, you can only give a relatively small amount a year. If you're not a member, you can't give anything. People are leaving money, you know, in Los Angeles. Kindly old mothers die. And they say, you saved Billy. I'm leaving you my house to help alcoholics. And the AA office has to take the house deed back to the lawyer and say, we can't accept it. Love to, but it's so refreshing in this greedy, stinking world that for 50 years, at least since the traditions, we don't take any money from anybody. So we are not bound to anybody. We don't have to take any crap from anybody. We have 12 steps and 12 traditions. And finally, the last one that I referred to a little while ago, the one that's always under attack, anonymity. Maybe anonymity was needed in 1938, but certainly not now. We have movie stars and political figures and well-known people throughout the world. I sponsored a guy a few years ago that is probably one of the three most well-known people in the 20th century. Maybe his picture's in all the history books. Wouldn't it be good if he stood up and said, I'm an AA, it would give a panache to AA. Remember some years ago, some of you remember, there was a very active AA. She helped carry the message to Australia. Then she wrote a book called I'll Cry Tomorrow. She said, I'm a member of AA. And she said, I'm going to help AA. And something happened. After she wrote that book, her personality changed a little bit. And a year later, when she was laying face down drunk on the streets of Palm Springs, she didn't hurt AA, but her life was going. Why would that be? Why shouldn't people stand up and say, I'm an AA? How does that hurt AA? It doesn't. Nothing you or I can do is going to hurt AA in that regard. The only thing you and I can do to hurt AA is to sell it out so we're no longer an integral, self-supporting, straightforward organization. But breaking your anonymity, or some movie star breaking your anonymity, or some government leader breaking your anonymity is not going to hurt AA. What it does, it alters the spiritual condition of the anonymity breaker. And it has done it again and again. Because without even being aware of it, you slide from one to another. I'm here because AA gives me help. I am here, and I'm going to help AA. And little by little, that change takes place. It's the same change, that at a slightly different level, that makes so many alcoholic counselors get drunk. AA counselors. AA members who become counselors. There's nothing wrong with an AA member becoming a counselor. They should be the best people in the world. But there's no question all over the world. Maybe 75% of AAs who become counselors get drunk. Why? Because they get thinking, for a slightly different reason, I work with alcoholics all day. There's no sense sitting with those well-meaning amateurs at night at 8 o'clock. But it gets down to this. I'll go to a meeting tonight and I will help AA. Anytime that I get my ego out of joint, intellectually or emotionally, or because of my fame, where I think I'm doing you a favor by coming, I'm in trouble. And that's why we have to maintain our anonymity. So there's not self-aggrandizement. So we do have principles before personalities, so that we do not buffet ourselves. There's many, many cases. I could quote you all kinds of cases over the years of those things that have happened. But I don't want to take any more time. I just want to say this. Alcoholics Anonymous and its traditions are a rather remarkable thing. Its history is fortunate. You and I are indeed most fortunate to be living in the 1%, less than 1% of recorded history where there's a place for people like you and me to go. With 12 steps that aren't too difficult, that will enable us, once we become sober and in possession of our faculties, to enjoy and profit from the example of men like the rabbi tonight and his intellectual and emotional guidance to us, which is wonderful but wouldn't keep any one of us sober if we were drinking. That's the critical funny part. And these 12 traditions that we sometimes forget and sometimes slough over, I think it's good to read the long form once a month. We do it in our group too, because it helps you remember it. It doesn't take any longer than chapter 5, but it helps you remember. This is not just some kind of a game. This is based on people dying to bring those about. And what is the purpose of all of it? So we'll become wonderful? No. So we'll live without pain or agony? Nope. None of us will ever rise above human being. And human beings have occasional troubles and emotions and conflicts and pains. It's just that it gives us a technique to deal with it in sanity rather than having to induce psychosis that'll destroy us. As Meredith read tonight, the end of the long form of the 12 traditions have always been to me the manifestation of why I go to meetings, why I try to help others if I can, why I try to observe the traditions, why I try desperately to maintain my anonymity. I'm in a position where I do a lot of television work in Hollywood because of the nature of my work today and because I'm a recovered alcoholic. As some of you know, there's been a long article about me in the Reader's Digest. There's been all sorts. I get more published than anybody in the world, I guess. But to the best of my knowledge, my anonymity has never been broken as a member of AA, because that's one thing I tell them. If you tell them, they won't. Why would I want to maintain my anonymity? Why do I want to do all these things? I'm not a wonderful man. I'm a weak, willful, selfish, petty person sometimes. It's something that is at the end of those 12 traditions, and it's something why we should continue to try to do these things. It says, this to the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall live forever in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. God bless you.